I'm Robin Biedenbow. I'm coordinator of library marketing and communications here at the University of Tennessee.
Robin Biedenbow, welcome to Changing Course.
Thank you.
There's a book out, and it's called From the Remains, Reflections on Station 11. So if I'm getting this correctly, this is a book that reflects upon another book or from another book.
Indeed it is.
How did this come about? What's the genesis of this project?
Well, the genesis of this project actually, we started with a previous book. So this is the second book in our Reflections series. The first is titled Toward Justice, Reflections on a Lesson Before Dying. And it was in 2016, David Byrd, who was then managing director of the Clarence Brown Theater, approached me. He had been working closely with the Knox County Public Library, and their big read book that year was A Lesson Before Dying by Ernest J. Gaines. We started talking about how the university libraries could join in this partnership with the Knox County Public Library and the Big Read. And what we found out was that the first-year studies program on campus also had, you know, incoming freshmen were all reading A Lesson Before Dying. And as we started brainstorming like how we might contribute to this, the idea came up, well, we have this online press. Why don't we make a book? We're a library, after all. We like books. So for that project, we, you know, reached out to some key people and said, hey, would you be willing to write an essay based on your reflections on either the play that was being done by Clarence Brown Theater or the book? And we got some good contributions, and we got some artwork from students at Austin East who had been working with their teacher to, you know, do artwork reflecting on the book. And it turned into this great little volume. So great that when Station 11 was assigned for first-year studies this past year, and the Knox County Public Library was, Station 11 was their big read book again. So we decided, why not make another one?
So the book sort of takes over Knoxville in a sense.
Yeah, it does. So it's been a fantastic project to work on because we have contributors in both volumes who are students, scholars, members of the community. So it's really sort of a fantastic and, you know, broad range of reflections on this book.
Well, for those that haven't read the book Station 11, it's quite dystopian, and it starts out basically there's the Georgia flu, which wipes out most of civilization. So it's kind of a happy story, right?
It is.
Well, there is some hope in it, I have to say. But did you worry about that? Like when you're doing reflections, like, oh, I don't want to write about this, is too depressing, or, you know.
I didn't worry too much about it because, you know, there are, particularly since, you know, shows like The Walking Dead and all this other dystopian literature and, you know, all these things are turning into movies and TV. It's the kind of thing people think about. So it's really interesting to see, particularly in the From the Remains book, you know, you get perspectives from an infectious disease specialist, from, engineering professor who's, you know, focused on quantum computing. Really, really broad range of responses.
That's what makes it so interesting to me and makes it such a fun read is that, well, first of all, I love to be surprised in art, in books, in music, plays, paintings, whatever. I love to be surprised. And every page, you're not sure what's coming next. And sometimes you turn it, and it's a wonderful painting. I like the one by Ashley Beckman that's in there, for example. I just opened up to it. And it's just really nice to get all these different perspectives. And this book serves as a really interesting launching point, I thought, for a lot of really thoughtful views and reflections on Station 11.
Indeed, and one of the things that we really, when we put out the call for papers, we because my fantasy was that every department on campus would have a professor and a student who would want to contribute. We didn't get that far, but we did again, you know, get some interdisciplinary responses. And I think that's the interesting thing. We asked people to reflect on the book from their perspective. So, you know, we have essays, we have poetry, we have artwork, there's some song lyrics in here, there's even a musical composition.
Yeah, how did you deal with the musical composition? I mean, you can't put an MP3 in there or a phonograph or whatever.
Well, I guess that's only going to be particularly useful for people who can read music.
Yeah. So if you go to the book, the sheet music, I guess, is what you would call it, is in there.
Yes.
The novel, and I think From the Remains, both kind of ask this question. Is that, you know, if you tear a civilization down or if a civilization crumbles, what parts do you bring back and what parts do you leave?
And that's sort of where the title came from, because my team brainstormed for a while. We have a whiteboard wall in our office and we had title for new book and people kept writing little things as people had ideas. And I was like, you know, well, basically they're trying to rebuild something from what was left. So From the Remains it was.
It's kind of interesting for me because I grew up in the Cold War era. I mean, mm-hmm. right at the height, I was born in the 60s when I didn't cause the Cuban Missile Crisis, but I was right there in the middle of it in terms of my timing. And I remember growing up with a little bit of a sense of dread. And maybe that's why I loved films like Dr. Strangelove and some of the sci-fi books of the time, which were dystopian, and the Twilight Zone episodes where, you know, Burgess Meredith is at the end of the world and all this. I'm wondering if our new generation, because of all these super bugs out there, or climate change and all these predictions of disaster, I wonder if they're drawn to these types of work for a similar reason.
It's quite possible, because I mean, I have a similar love of, you know, that kind of science fiction and this dystopian future art. I think it's sort of the same thing. I mean, I was born in the 70s, but, you know, the Cold War continued. Like, are we doing that again? It looks like we might be trying again in a little different way.
Is it over? Maybe it's just a break.
Just a quick break.
We'll be right back with your Cold War after this announcement. What's the response been to From the Remains?
Everyone who has had a chance to get their hands on it has had a similar reaction to you, which is it's this fantastic little book, and, you know, there's a surprise every time you start a new essay or flip a page, and it's had a great response.
It's put out by Newfound Press. Now,
yes.
What is that, and how does that relate to UT Libraries?
Newfound Press is actually a digital imprint. It is you know, universities typically regard it as part of their educational mission to share the scholarship that's created on their campuses. And so that usually happens through the university press. So UT Press and Newfound Press are two different things. So it was in 2005 that the libraries launched its own online imprint. So it's mostly digital, so you can find, for instance, you can go to newfoundpress.utk.edu and you can download a copy of From the Remains or Toward Justice. Those are still there, along with other publications. So establishing this digital press, you know, allows the libraries to make scholarly and very specialized resources available, because book publishing takes a long time and it costs money. And so to remove the print part as a necessity allows us to put some more specialized stuff that wouldn't necessarily be commercially viable.
Given that, is this part of how libraries are evolving in the modern age? What's going on?
Yeah, libraries are doing a lot more with publishing, you know, works from their own faculties and from their university faculties. And this includes, you know, online journal systems. So they're, you know, working with, sort of across the globe, actually, because it's happening a lot in Europe and various other places where, you know, now that we're not tied to a print paradigm, it's much easier to figure out new ways to publish scholarly work. And, you know, hopefully in the end, try and save libraries a little bit of money, because it costs us a lot of money to get those scholarly journals so that faculty have access to it. So when they're online and open access, it makes it a lot easier on everyone.
So anyone can anyone download from the remains, like someone in Montana?
Absolutely. Someone in Australia, someone in New Zealand, someone happens to be hanging out down in Antarctica and is bored and wants something to read. If you've got the internet connection, you can download this for free.
Robin Biedenboe, thanks for talking with us today on Changing Course.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from two people that contributed to this book, Anna Franklin and Brooks Clark. Up next on Changing Course, it's Brooks Clark. His essay is, What Will I Do in the Coming Dystopia? Just a little background, what do you exactly do at the University of Tennessee on a regular basis?
As a staff member, I'm the project manager for alumni communications. So that means that I write a lot of alumni profiles and profiles of our donors and stories in alumni magazines and emails going out to alumni. I'm also a lecturer in the Journalism and Electronic Media School. I co-teach magazine production workshop, so I'm working with students on magazine writing and creating a magazine. As it happens, I also would, when freshmen read a book for the Life of the Mind program, I'll read the book and facilitate one of the sessions with around 25 students, and then you go down and often hear the writer talk, and that's an introduction for freshmen of sort of taking part in a discussion about a book and about issues and how it impacts them, and then they get to actually see the author and hear the author and perhaps ask questions.
Yeah, and I've done that myself, and I got to say it's an incredibly rewarding experience.
That's the way I feel about it.
So when you teach these books for Life of the Mind, I assume that some books you probably love, some maybe you don't love as much, but I'm sure you get something out of each of them.
Yes, when I think of Tracy Kidder's Mountains Beyond Mountains, that's an inspiring book about the three people who went down and worked in Haiti and founded an entire health company to bring health to the poorest people, health care to the poorest people in the country. That was inspiring. And there are many reasons I enjoyed that book and talking about it. And the kids all are inspired as well.
Well, Station 11 is a very different book from that.
Well, it is new fiction, and it's takes place after some health crisis has happened, and I think it's 99% of the people are wiped out almost instantly. So electricity ceases, everything ceases. And a group of actors and symphony musicians are on the road in wagons with horses, and they're performing their art, Shakespeare and symphonies, to the people they find who are gathered in small villages or tribes. And it's the kind of book that's in different. Time is not chronological. You bounce back and forth from before the crisis, and things pop up. So it's a very interesting study just in the way things are written.
And then how did it come that you were included in this book, which is a sort of a collection of reflections on Station 11? It's called From the Remains. How did you become involved in that?
First, when the author came to UT to speak, I did, because I'd read the book, I did go, and my wife's book club had read the book. So she and all of her friends were there also. And so we were very much engaged in that. And the people in the library put out a call saying, we are welcoming reactions to this book. They did the same thing for when Clarence Brown did A Lesson Before Dying. And that was the Knoxville book. Everyone reacted to A Lesson Before Dying. And, of course, the fact that Clarence Brown did the play at the same time made everyone engaged in that. So out came the request for reactions, not just from students, but from staff and faculty. And I believe that Holly Mercer, the associate dean of libraries, said, surely you can come up with a reaction to this. We'd like to see what you have to contribute. I'd written a biography of Dr. John C. Hodges for their 30th anniversary booklet for the library. And so I took that challenge and gave what's basically a very personal reaction to the novel.
You dive into some comparisons of other type works that it reminds you of, but it explains how they're different. I mean, you mentioned Hunger Games, Soylent Green, you know, which is people, by the way.
Soylent Green is people. Yeah. Yes.
Is this a genre that that you find interesting?
Very much so. And we, you know, I begin by comparing it to The Road, and I remember having a discussion with a very literary colleague in which I said, oh, it sort of reminds me of The Road. This is Cormac McCarthy's book about after, we don't ever know whether it's a nuclear winter or a volcanic winter, but there's clouds and life has ceased, so everyone is basically devastated on Earth, and food sources are gone. So in Cormac McCarthy's The Road, a father and a son walk basically from Ohio through Knoxville, although it's not named, down to the coast of, I think, South Carolina. And my colleague said, no, it's not like The Road at all. And she was correct that the themes are totally different. The Road has unbelievable violence and unspeakable things, but it's a much different mood and theme. This one, I think, has a lot more hope and what we're keeping of art even in the most dire of circumstances. And what do you have in your mind is one of the questions that I have, and that reminded me of another Clarence Brown production from a couple of years ago, Mr. Burns, a post-electric play, in which all electricity has ceased. This is a common theme in dystopia, I guess. But when the people reconvene over campfires, the only thing they can have to unify themselves, the stories they tell, are recreating episodes of The Simpsons. And as always, you remember pretty much or a little bit or what sticks out for you. And in the course of the play, you see how these evolve into mythology or unifying themes of civilization and are completely different from, of course, the original Simpsons episode. So that leads me to think, you know, what would I take now? I don't know if I would have my guitar with me after the, maybe I would take my guitar, but all of the canon of rock and roll songs that I can play and sing, and I will if you ask me, so that's another danger.
You know, we have a guitar in the back studio.
So if you would like to hear Honey Don't by Carl Perkins or Secret Agent Man by Johnny Rivers, that can happen. And so by the campfires, that's certainly what I would bring after the dystopia, along with perhaps we'd sing La Marseillaise because we've all seen Casablanca. And I do. And what do I know? I don't know that many poems the way the ancient Greeks, I think they could recite the Iliad or something. Maybe it was a song for them. But, you know, maybe some people can recite Hiawatha or something. But I can only recite the first two verses of The Cremation of Sam McGee by Robert Service. And that's pretty much all the reciting I can do. So I don't have that much that's inside me. And that makes you think, you know, what we depend so much on our books and the things that we rely on.
Why do you think people are so fascinated with these types of novels and the end of the earth and what we would take? Why are we so interested in this?
I mean, you know, the movie I Am Legend just popped in my mind about New York City with everybody dead except for a couple of people and the mutant people who only come out at night. Why are we are fascinated by what would happen if just this all ended? Would I walk around, what would it be like to walk around the empty streets of Manhattan? And the Hunger Games is so compelling for everyone, and I don't know why.
Well, I don't know if this has anything to do with anything, but I remember years ago talking to a psychologist, and she was telling me that, you know, a lot of times you'll imagine the death of your parents or people you care about and wonder why you're doing it. And perhaps the reason is to help prepare yourself for when it actually does happen, so it's not just such a shock. And I'm wondering if we're trying to prepare ourselves for the potential effects of things like global warming and stuff. Even if it happens or doesn't happen, maybe we're trying to think it through now so it won't be impossible to process it.
Well, and something just popped back in my head from modern American fiction in college, in which my wonderful professor did say everything, all fiction now, just after the bomb, all our fiction, including beat fiction, descends from the notion that it could all end. And it's very much, of course, in all 50s movies and 50s literature, there is the idea that it all ends. And we all know the wonderful Twilight Zone, where the librarian, Burgess Meredith, is a short-sighted, I mean, a myopic librarian, and he just wishes he could just sit and read books. And he goes into the safe in the bottom of the library, and the bomb comes down, and he comes up out of to find everything's destroyed, but the books are okay. And then he falls down and breaks his glasses, so he can't read the books, even though he has nothing but time and no one there to bother him. So that's our, you know, we love the idea that, oh, wouldn't it be, you know, yes, there's a, what would we like if it all went away? Well, I could just read my books and be left alone.
There were several Twilight episodes that dealt with sort of the end of times or the end of the earth, you know, the impermanence of it all.
Yes, and I think, you know, global warming, we did have Earth with an A in it by Bill McKibben as our freshman book a few years ago. And he makes many persuasive cases in there. But what struck me was the freshman reactions in the class. Everybody, and this was six years ago, acknowledged that climate change was happening. And three of the students said we shouldn't do anything about it, and they had their own different reasons. But one of the students was from Bangladesh, and he said, oh, the water is already rising where I live. And many of my friends, you know, their skin is cracking because of the salt. We can't get the salt off of our skin. And so we know all about global warming. And okay, there's testimony from somebody from, you know, that area. And islands are being swallowed up every day in that part of the world. So, yes, it's real, I think, for us.
Brooks Clark, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
My name is Anna Franklin, and I'm a student at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville.
What's your major?
I'm an Honors Communication Studies major.
How'd you pick that?
It's a bit of an interesting story, really. I came into UT as a kinesiology major. I wanted to do dance injury prevention because that's a really close to my heart. But then I got in, and I just wasn't happy. And I actually thought I was going to drop out of college because of this. And I submitted my application to withdraw from the university. I was like, this is not for me. I want to be happy. I don't want to just survive somewhere. And so I started thinking about it, and actually a voice of reason said, why don't you check into communication studies, Anna? You know, I think it's closer to who you are and what you could do and what you'll be doing with your life. And so I looked into it, and here I am today. I withdrew my withdrawal from the university and actually came back and decided to become an honors track communication studies major. And here I am. I'm thriving in the major now instead of just surviving.
That's great to hear, actually. The new book that I'm reading right now is called From the Remains, Reflections on Station 11. So it's a book about a book, or I should say maybe a book that is a reflection of another book. It's put out by the UT Libraries Newfound Press. How did you get involved with this project? How did you end up writing an essay for this?
Well, as an incoming freshman, each of us had to write an essay for our first year studies class. And I did that, I submitted my assignment, and a couple of months later, I heard back from UT Libraries, reaching out to freshmen, asking them to submit their essays for this compilation of reflections. And so I thought, sure, why not? I mean, I thought it would be a really cool opportunity to submit my essay. I've done a lot of work on fiction, but this is one of my first nonfiction, really inspirational pieces.
Well, you got in, which is great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But then once you get in, you know that a lot of people are going to read it, that editors are going to check it out. Were you nervous about, like, okay, now what do I do?
Right. A little bit. It was kind of nerve-wracking. I submitted it, and then I didn't hear anything back for over a year from them. So I thought, well, I just probably wasn't selected. I wasn't one of the chosen few, you know. But then I got an email last April, I believe, about this essay that they'd chosen me and they were about to publish it, and they'd actually already done the entire compilation and they just emailed it to me so I could read it and check it out. It was just like a boom, boom, all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah. What is that like? What is that sensation like of picking up a book or opening up a book on a Kindle, whatever, and seeing your work in there?
It's a very special thing because your words are an extension of you, and that's especially true for me. I write from my heart. I write for a message. I don't just write just to write. I want to write something that I know will impact someone. And to me, to know that this will have an impact on, you know, just beyond my family, just beyond my friends that I shared this with, to me, there is nothing more special than that. You see, my definition of success is changing the world one person at a time, and just knowing that even if one more person reads this, that I've had an impact on the world. It's a beautiful thing.
Are you happy with how it turned out?
Very happy. I love that the artwork they paired me with, it's a beautiful comic from a rendition of one of the comics in Station 11, and I was thrilled to see that my essay had been paired with that. And just the format, the feel, I love the way the book turned out.
Anna Franklin, thanks for talking to us. We'd love to have a little excerpt from your essay, if you could.
In the post-apocalyptic world of Station 11, survival is still the status quo, even 20 years after the Georgia flu. Most individuals scraped by with only one focus in mind: make it through the day. Those with any remaining hope only dreamed about the world as it used to be, but their blissful talk was just shallow hope, for the old world was long gone. Every sunrise brought the same dreadful reality: survive today. A few individuals had the audacity to cling to that shallow hope. At the base of it all, their core motivation was their succinct mantra that survival was insufficient. But if survival is insufficient, why was the traveling symphony content to survive? Indeed, they were thriving in the fine arts, but is success in one area considered thriving as a whole? Or had they actually accepted survival without even realizing? This survival mindset was mutual across all of remaining humanity. Not once did these individuals think about pioneering a new society after the end of the world, because they were content that they had survived the apocalypse. Yet I long to step into Mandel's novel and ask the remaining souls, why not use timber to build houses instead of living in old buildings? Why not use natural ingredients to create soap? Why not weave fabric? While we're at it, why not engineer a new fuel to power cars? Even without all the grandeurs of the old world, a primitive civilization could have easily been developed in 18 or 19 years, except that all the survivors remain trapped in the survival mindset. When I look across my college campus, I see the same mindset. It grips countless students on college campuses across the nation today. They've been dropped into an entirely new world, never to return. They long for the old comforts of high school, but focus on surviving. To these students, college is only about making the grade. Their mantra is survive today. Survival is still the status quo. Most souls scrape by with only one focus in mind: make it through the day. Those with any remaining hope only yearn for the world as it used to be. It's a shallow hope, for the old world is long gone. Every sunrise brings the same dreadful reality: survive today.
Thanks again to all of our guests on today's Changing Course: Anna Franklin, Brooks Clark, and Robin Biedenbow. For Changing Course, a production of WUOT, I'm Todd Steed. Thanks for listening.